Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Hello and welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. Back safe and sound from the land of crazy elections and the MCV Linwood, Washington studio. Happy to be home. I have another great guest for you, as always, focused on the volunteer state and our nation today, with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest Christopher Richards, newly elected and hard-won Williamson County Commissioner. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us on Amazon Music or Spotify at Mill Creek View Tennessee Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the show so you don't miss a single episode. And thank you for listening. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with newest county commissioner, Christopher Richards. By way of introduction to today's show, I think Williamson County resident Steve Hickey said it best in an op-ed to the Tennessee Conservative website. Williamson County District 7 voters were shocked and saddened to learn longtime county commissioner Bert Chalfant passed away on August 24th. His passing set in motion an accelerated Republican nomination process for the November 8th special election, culminating in Chris Richards' Tuesday night victory over former Commissioner Bobby Hewlett at the Cool Springs Marriott Convention Center. There is much more to this story than a quick, intense, and surprisingly highly visible campaign. The main story involves the convention itself and the planning thereof. The Williamson County Republican Party was caught with a difficult situation, producing a nominee by the September 16th ballot deadline. To their credit, they decided to allow the voters to decide the outcome rather than a closed-door appointment. The WCRP and party elites have had a fraught relationship with local conservative grassroots groups since the previous spring's GOP primary. The name-calling, reminiscent of how Democrats attack, was disturbing. Worse, the weaponization of rules effectively shut doors for citizens participating in the election process. The midsummer Soviet-style purge of the lone conservative voice on the WCRP's executive committee further left local conservatives tasting bile. To many of us, this all appeared to be the antithesis of what Republicans stand for: truth, freedom, and a fair fight in the arena of ideas. As a result, there was a jaundiced view among many Williamson County conservatives regarding the process being dictated by the very people who had shown open hostility toward them in the very recent past. The party announced on August 30th via email to its members that it was conducting a September 13th mass convention. The rejection of bona fide GOP voters is not the way to build the party. The selective use of rules against those with whom you disagree is not the way to build the party. Calling your fellow Republicans names and engaging in unfounded character assassination is not the way to build the party. Shrouding an election in secrecy and not allowing outside visibility of its processes is not the way to build nor endanger trust in that party. Engender. Relationship building is how you build the party. As WCRP Assistant Secretary Chad Story noted at the end, this election was ultimately decided by the candidate who most effectively engaged the electorate. Chris Richards built those relationships with the electorate and turned out significantly more voters than his opponent Tuesday night. As a member of the conservative grassroots here in Williamson County, I hope this lesson is not lost on the party and they recognize marginalized their base is no longer a viable strategy. Mr. Richardson, thank you for putting up with that. Do you disagree with anything I said?
I don't. I think you said Richardson. It's Richards.
Richards. Richards.
No. If we want to talk about the convention, or should I rewind and start from the very beginning of my story?
Well, I would like to start at the beginning. Your bio list says you are a stay-at-home dad and formerly worked in the music industry. Interesting, your opponent also listed stay-at-home mom in 2016. How old are your kids now, and what did you do in the music business?
Yeah, that was a previous career back before the kids were born. I used to work, like I said, in the music business. I used to do special events for the RCA label group, which is no longer. They were bought up by Sony Music. I decided to stay home and raise my kids back in 2001. It was when my son was born. I've been doing that for about 20 years. I'm like, really, right now my kids are all off at college. I'm partially retired. I'm like, we have enough savings that we're able to live pretty comfortably.
That's good.
And that's hence my interest in the county commission. I did get my original interest in politics was back in, if I recall correctly, it was 2014. I ran for the school board against, surprise, surprise, Bobby Hullett.
We'll talk about that for sure. The Williamson County School District is located in Williamson County here in central Tennessee, and the county seat is Franklin, where we are right now. Williamson County has about 211,000 residents, according to the United States Census Bureau, and the district was the sixth largest school district in the state and serves about 34,000 students. Tell us a little bit, about your Brentwood district and a little more about what got you into the school board race in 2016, I think it was, but I think you said 14.
I think you're right. I had at the time kids in elementary school. I wasn't happy with how the elementary school was being run. They just were probably the biggest thing that seemed to be only bothering me at the time was parental rights issues, being able to get into the school and see what was going on. And there was a large pushback from the staff about even being able to go in there. A lot of the rules I thought were just, you know, that the kids came in and go sit down in the cafeteria for lunch, and they weren't allowed to get back up again after they sat down for no reason whatsoever. if they wanted to go get some more food, it was too bad. I think they were occasionally allowed to go use the bathroom. They were told to walk down hallways, you know, three floor tiles away from the wall. I never really did understand why they were doing that. They just had a lot of rules that I didn't agree with. So I reached out to the administration, was in long order told, go pound sand.
And that was 6 years ago. That's before COVID protocols or anything like that.
And so I was kind of at the forefront of this, and I was kind of alone. I reached out to my school board member at the time, who was Bobby Hullett, and he very quickly told me that he thought that everything was fine with the way the schools would be run. He didn't have any problem with any of the issues that I brought up to him. Come to find out that his wife teaches at Williamson County Schools.
In 2016, you were defeated by Bobby Hullett. We'll hear that name a few times. And that was for School Board District 7. Back then, the issues were rezoning, standardized testing, Common Core, religion as part of history or social studies, and resources at elementary school level, teacher turnover, and overcrowding. So we've come a long way. Rezoning is back again and relates to overcrowding. Let me read this real quick from the Tennessean. Williamson County Schools to rezone with opening of these new schools. Williamson County Schools will rezone as two new schools open. The district is building new elementary schools on Wilkes Lane and Cox Road. Residents are able to provide feedback at three community meetings. Okay. Well, they followed that up with Williamson County Charter School application denied by Tennessee Commission. So let me ask you this. Rezoning is back again and relates to overcrowding. Did Mr. Hullett do a good job cleaning up those other problems prior to this?
It's funny you should mention rezoning, because I'm paraphrasing here, but I remember Mr. Hullett making the statement, if you don't like rezoning, then don't have your kids go to a private school, which was something, again, I took at the time. He had a lot of support from the parents, who really hadn't been through COVID yet, and they hadn't seen all of this overreach from the schools, and, you know, basically negating parents' input. So I guess I didn't really think about it at the time, but I was probably at the forefront of it. And he had every single one of his votes, save for one, was in agreement with the school superintendent. At the time, it was Dr. Looney. So he was not offering any value whatsoever to the constituents. He was just serving as a rubber stamp for the, you know, the school administration. And that was yet another reason why I wanted to run. I thought I'd be, you know, brought in as the conquering hero. But I think a lot of parents at the time thought, oh, this guy is great. He's just all about the schools, and the schools are great.
So the overcrowding portion of that, if they wanted to build two new schools, which they are, why would they say no to charter schools? That's for overflow too.
You know, that's more of a current issue. We were talking about back, you know, quite a few years ago in Bobby Hullett's time.
This is back in the news today versus, exactly right. The rezoning back then.
You know, I don't have an answer for that. I certainly followed the whole charter school process. And as a conservative, I think competition is good. And I certainly do not have a problem. And I find it interesting the arguments that are used against charter schools. It'll take money away from the public schools. Not if you're teaching well. I'm like, I think if you don't have to worry about the competition, I'm like, I think the only time you really need to worry about charter schools taking money away from you is if you're not doing what the parents want you to be doing.
That's exactly right. Now, Penny Schwinn, our Tennessee Commissioner of Education, she got a nasty letter from the Department of Education demanding compliance with Fed standards. And it says, as a result, I am placing a condition on TDOE's, Tennessee's Department of Education's Title I Part A grant award until such time as these issues are fully resolved or else, aka ESL money back. What are your thoughts on a federal agency making demands on our schools?
Don't like it. I have not been able to actually sit in the county commissioner's chair, but I've sat in enough meetings and seen enough discussions. Just recently, the meeting before last, we talked about trying to not take federal funds, because there's a thought and nobody's really done the math. Does it even really, are we getting enough money? You know, a lot of these are unfunded mandates. Are we really getting enough money to make it worthwhile? And I think a lot of the conservative commissioners don't think that it is.
No, and the strings attached are often very expensive, even though you can't quantify that in dollars. So you're right, maybe 0.1% of the budget for a lot of rules and regulations.
Exactly.
And,
you know,
and 1/3 of Tennessee kids statewide don't read at grade level. So unfortunately, they have a wedge. But, you know, Williamson County is 90% white. 54% attain a bachelor's degree. Does the county even deserve all the scrutiny about equity when it's 4.5% black versus Tennessee at 17%? And only 25% of the state goes to college versus Williamson County, where more than double that is the state average for going to college, over 50%. So what's it worth 6% or below poverty level here versus 18 statewide, which is 3 times? I guess what I'm asking is, why is the federal government cracking down on Williamson County when we seem to be doing pretty well?
Yeah, it's funny. I would kind of argue, I do think Williamson County as a whole is doing pretty well with their schools. Tennessee as a whole is not. And that is a loss on a lot of parents in Williamson County that, you know, that we celebrate how great the schools are. And I think the standard of living here is so great. And just, you know, the place that we live, rolling hills, and the schools add to that. But I also think that we are a diamond in the middle of a puddle of mud. Like, the Tennessee schools are not that good. So to compare us against the rest of Tennessee schools is not really fair. I think that's what you were basically saying, was that, you know, Williamson County doesn't really deserve all this scrutiny. I'm like, we're doing pretty well as compared to the rest of the Tennessee schools. Tennessee as a state is not doing all that well. And it definitely needs a lot more work.
Yeah, it'd be nice if the rest of the state emulated us and not the federal government trying to level the playing field by everybody else. Okay, so back to you. In 2018, you ran again, this time for D7 commissioner, but were defeated by longtime establishment favorites, Bert Chalfant and Tom Chalfant and Tom Tunnicliffe.
Yep.
How'd Bert do in the job while he was there? And, you know, we're not going to speak ill of him. I'll mention what happened to him in a minute, but how did he do in that role that made you want to challenge it?
I obviously ran because I was not happy with the way the county was going. It was a lot of the same reasons why I ran for the school board. It was more pronounced because I saw a lot of, at best, mismanagement at the county level. At the time, 4 years ago, the county was $600 million in debt. Now we're $1 billion in debt. That really didn't seem to get a lot of traction. Commissioner Chalfant was getting on in years and was having trouble concentrating on the commissioner meetings. He at our debate most recently, we were debating, I don't want to get too far off track, but we were debating whether or not to, the Renaissance Festival. We had purchased the Renaissance Festival in Franklin for $3 million, and he was advocating during the debate, yes, that was a great idea, to have bought the Renaissance Festival for $3 million. The only problem is he had voted against it. He didn't remember voting against it. There was quite a few issues like that. Mr. Chalfant probably did the same thing that I accuse a lot of people in our local government doing, is he just goes along to get along and follows what the county mayor wants him to do. And that's, we're here to serve, in my case, the people of Brentwood. That's who gets to elect us, and we serve their interest first, and then we start worrying about the county after that. That's why we have a whole bunch of different districts that get to vote for their own county commissioners.
Okay, so fast forward to this past spring, and you were recruited and were again defeated by Bert, rest his soul, and Tom in a primary that featured rampant crossover voting by Dem in the GOP primary. What are your thoughts on crossover voting at this point?
Well, it's funny. Side note, today we actually were able to finally look at the ballots from the paper ballots from that election. We did a hand count of them because we always it was meaningless. For the record, the hand it, your listeners should know I lost that election by 11 votes. My daughter was involved in a pretty bad accident 3 days before election day, so I stopped campaigning.
How is
And
she now?
she's doing much better. She's but I think you had mentioned early on, I don't think I ever said, of I've got three kids, two twin daughters, and who are 18 both, and a 21-year-old son. They're all going to University of Tennessee. And she's still recovering from it, but it obviously sidelined me. It was not, the election was no longer important. So I lost by 11 votes, and I was kind of reconciled to that. It surprised me because, Bert, as I went knocking door to door, had gotten no support. In our hand recount that we just did today, it did look like the votes, we did it pretty quickly, so we could have been off by a couple of votes, but it did look like the official vote counts were close to correct. They could have been off by 11 votes. Our count was off, for each candidate, off by like 10 or so votes, because we had to go through a box of all of the ballots of Williamson County, and then pull out the ones from District 7, of which there was, if my memory serves me correctly, I think it was like 1,600 ballots, and then we had to figure out how many people had voted for each one.
So Bert passed away in August, and you again ran to represent District 7 taxpayers. You say 11 short, maybe so. That's something like 0.04%, so pretty small. Let me read your contesting memo real quick. Thank you for coming here tonight to be part of this important event. I met a lot of you between February and April this year, and I went door to door in your neighborhood, meeting you on your doorsteps, looking you in the eye, and telling you about why I'm the best choice for County Commissioner in District 7. More importantly, I listened. I spent time hearing about your hopes and concerns, your frustrations with the county debt, Brentwood Middle School, which has been 15 years in the making, neighborhood flooding issues, and everything in between. I share your frustration. Unfortunately, my campaign was cut short on April 30th when my daughter, Brianna, was in a motorcycle accident and had to be rushed to Vanderbilt Medical Center for emergency surgery and major trauma. Her friend and fellow Brentwood High School senior, the young man driving the motorcycle, tragically died the night of the accident. That makes sense why you just told us that you were not there. Sadly, Bert Chaffent passed away a few weeks ago, just as he was finishing up his 36th year in office. And that is why we are here today to determine who is the best Republican candidate to move on to the November 8th special election, which you were able to win. And then I wanted to ask you about, there is no reason for our county to be $1 billion in debt. Our commissioners have lacked the discipline and responsibility to say no to wasteful spending, to say no to shelling out nearly $3 million for the Renaissance Festival or $14 million for a new animal shelter, while our police and fire departments remain underfunded and understaffed. I have no problem standing up to say no. If it's not part of our long-range plan to make Williamson County fiscally sound, it is not something we should invest your money in. So I know you get sworn in this Friday. What are your priorities?
Well, you can kind of take one guess from that. I tried to have some input in the meeting last night. It ironically wasn't the spending of money, but it was the incoming of money. The county mayor cut a deal with a local mining company to mine on county property. In doing some quick research on that deal, it looked like we may potentially be underpaid by about 400%. The mining terms were that we got 5% of the profits. We should have potentially gotten up to 25% of the profits, and that was after I checked with a mining expert. Since I was not a commissioner, I brought this up at the meeting last night during public commentary, and really the commission didn't care. I'm like, yeah. There was conservative dissension against it. I kind of was stunned because it's really not a conservative versus liberal versus establishment versus unestablishment. This is county property, and we should be good stewards of that. And we really were making hundreds of thousands on this deal. We could be making millions on this deal. The deal was completely done on the say-so of the construction company. We did not have an expert come in and take a look at it. And so that's, I've begun my fight in trying to find ways that the county needs to do a lot better job at being stewards of the assets of our county residents.
Yeah. Now, because of that 0.04 slim margin of defeat, let's say, that could have been a victory, you had a contesting memo. You did appeal that, the results to the state GOP. They denied it. You had three things of contention that, from what I could gather, you had that ES&S voting machines, which replaced Dominion, had the same unreliable issues. Democrats voted in the Republican primary, which were encouraged by Democrats to vote for the incumbent. Yep. And number three, confusing ballot instructions, something to the effect of vote for two versus up to two candidates. Something in Washington that we're now calling ranked choice voting, which hopefully they don't institutionalize, but it sounds really close to that. Are those three things still on your mind? Do you think you'll have the ability to affect change there on the council, or are we going to be living with those for a long time?
You actually missed one.
I did.
They're the most important one, which actually it's not well known. My election, that election back in May, was overturned for about half an hour before the state election committee. We had discovered in one voting center, people in Williamson County can vote wherever they want to within the county. So within one voting center, we had 10 more ballots than applications to vote. And we were able to prove, I had to hire an attorney, we were able to prove that, along with one other vote, which has never been accounted for, that that was enough of a irregularity that the election should be overturned. The Republican Party agreed, and they overturned it. And then as soon as they overturned it, they realized they didn't know what to do now. They didn't know what kind of resolution to, what resolution to provide. So they voted to un-overturn the election. After some calls, I believe, from the county mayor and whatnot to the state party officials. So they un-overturned the election after that. Yes, I have a lot of concerns about election integrity. That issue alone that caused my election to be overturned was a clerical error. Well, 10 of those votes, they had carried over a number 30 and it inflated it to 40. So it looked like there was more ballots cast than were actually applications to vote. We had many more issues that I wanted to present to the state SEC to contest the election, more ballot irregularities. That was probably our strongest argument, but we weren't allowed to do that after that point in time. I'm like, it was very quickly the election was certified, and we're here today with, well, we'll move forward in a second.
Yeah, someone's going to have to go to jail, and you know, one fraudulent ballot is too many. So until there are consequences, I'm afraid we're going to have to keep going with that. You mentioned ESNS replacing Dominion. Everyone knows Dominion from 2020's election and how they became kind of a household name of having problems with their machines. I was just recently learned that the state of Tennessee has about 42 voting machine companies running elections in their state, when most states have somewhere between one and two. Do you know anything about why we have so many voting companies involved in our votes when we only need paper ballots and one day elections?
No, long, you know, short answer, no, I do not. That's news to me that we have so many different companies. I've gone around with our election commission, you know, and there's a bunch of us who have concerns about election integrity, having modems inside the machines, just even being able to look at the machines. Obviously, with me having a, you know, 11 vote difference in a vote, you want to make sure that every vote was truly counted and counted accurately.
Especially since the Democratic votes. Tell us about that open primary and how we can prevent that in the future, where Republicans vote for Republicans and Democrats vote for Democrats, so the winner is the person that the party wants.
Don't get me started. really, we had in my election, bona fide status is what the Republican Party uses if you voted in three out of the last four state Republican primaries, determines that you're a bona fide Republican. That's how they determine if you're a Republican or a Democrat.
Does that mean six out of the last 8 years? One every 2 years?
Yes.
Something like that?
Yeah. It requires a fair amount of commitment. I'm like, because it's a public record about whether or not you voted in a Republican or a Democrat primary. So we use those as we're campaigning to figure out who is truly a Democrat and who is a Republican.
So, and hypothetically, had you changed your mind from a Republican under Trump and now you're a Democrat in the new era, you couldn't really get involved because of your lack of voting record that showed you had six consistent years in one party.
Correct.
Okay. And this is similar to what they did with Ortegas and Starbuck by not letting them run at all because they hadn't lived here long enough.
Correct. And full disclosure, Robbie Starbuck, he sounds like a solid conservative, but I actually kind of do think that there should be, and this is my viewpoint, you should have I don't mind the requirements of the bona fide that the Republican Party has, because I think you need to be here for a while to really understand what it's all about. I'm not going to say that the three out of the last four is maybe the standard we should have. And some people are allowed to transfer their bona fide status from another state, but other states have different qualifications. And so the Republican Party, I know, is reluctant to do that. I know Robbie Starbuck, I don't think, had voted in any of the last Republican primaries, if I'm correct.
So what they used to call a carpetbagger, somebody who just comes in out of the blue and says, now I'm going to save your state from everything else. We had the same situation with Gary Humble here. He came from Texas. He decided to run and he wasn't the favorite of the establishment. But the favorite of the establishment against you was Bobby Hewlett, again, like in 2016. Yes. But this time you succeeded in obtaining the GOP nomination. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Did you want to talk about that nominating process and that convention? Because it was pretty exciting news there for a while. I wasn't allowed to go. I hadn't been here long enough.
I do. I very much do. The process was, they did not, Mr. Chalfant had passed away, not leaving enough time to have a standard primary, which is how we usually pick our Republican candidates, which is what had happened in May. So instead of that, they decided to have, but already they couldn't decide quite what to call it. At some point in time, they called it a delegated convention. At some point in time, they called it a mass convention. And those all have different rules associated with them. They announced this convention as a way to pick who their candidate is, the Republican candidate. In full disclosure, they could have appointed me and just been done with it. Since I had just lost by 11 votes previously in May,
sure.
I was happy to compete because more choice is better. I'm happy to let the people have a choice. What I was sorry to see was that choice given to the people was highly restricted and confusing. There was a lot of people, the requirements, again, were back to bona fide, is that you had to have voted in three out of the last four Republican primaries. And this wasn't told to us until I think the day of the actual convention, that you had to have given to the state or county Republican Party, and even to this day, I'm not sure if it was just the county party and not the state, which ended up meaning a lot of people who did have bona fide status, having voted in three out of the last four, were not allowed to go.
That's borderline a poll tax as well, which is illegal. So I don't know why they decided to put a monetary thing on there.
Yeah, and the irony is, as the party leaders had said, well, we're not going to allow you to show up on the day of and pay party fees because that would be a poll tax. Ah. But you could do it the day before.
And so this is the primary we're talking about. And then you had a general election that had both a Dem and a left-leaning independent. And again, you succeeded, which is why I'm calling you the Perseverance. James 1:12, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. So congratulations again to
Thank you.
So for some, the red puddle instead of the red tsunami demoralized them and they want to give up. But change doesn't happen all at once, and your campaign proved you can overcome. Here's how yours was reported, ultimately. The Tennessee Republican Party Executive Committee voted to uphold election results in two Williamson County races on Thursday during a 90-minute meeting, the second day of a two-day discussion of the challenges, with committee members again expressing their desire for closed primaries. Christopher Richards, a candidate for Williamson County Commission District 7, challenged the outcome of his race, while Williamson County School Board candidate Allie Adair challenged the outcome of her bid to unseat incumbent Eric Welch. Both races were close. Richards came in third place behind incumbent GOP Commissioner Tom Tunnicliffe and Bert Chalfant, losing to Chalfant by only 9 votes, while Welch defeated Adair by 39 votes. And both challenges hinged on alleged allegations of voting in Republican primaries by Democratic voters. In the Richards and Chalfant case, Austin McMullen, attorney for Richards, contested 11 votes that were cast at the College Grove early voting location, but TNGOP Chair Scott Golden pointed out that only 2 of the 11 contested votes had been cast in the District 7 County Commission primary. After about an hour of wrangling, committee members Randy Ellis of Roan County called the question of the motion he first made during a Wednesday meeting to accept the results of the election. Ellis's motion passed 27-13 with one abstention. Sound about right?
It does. That was the second day. That was what I was mentioning, where they originally decided to overturn it. Yeah. They unoverturned it. They tabled it for the next day, and they met the second day. What you just read was a rendition of what happened on the second day.
So how do we prevent that from ever happening to anyone else ever again?
Well, the SEC put a lot of blame on Williamson County and their voting processes. And honestly, I think that's a little unfair. Williamson County is probably at least average and maybe even above average compared to the other counties. The crossover votes that you mentioned, I think I was starting to say that a lot of the voters who voted in my election were bona fide Democrats, and the Republican Party is not really willing to do anything about that because they hope that someday they'll become Republicans. And I get where they're coming from, but you've got to be able to have secure elections, or otherwise you're going to have Democrats. Democrats definitely decided my election. And as being a conservative Republican, I am at a severe disadvantage with Democrats being allowed to vote in my election because they're not going to vote for me. And there was at least 75 bona fide Democrats voting in our election that I don't think any of them are going to vote for me.
So they said the ensuing discussion about a desire for closed primaries, Tennessee has a partially open primary system that does not require party registration, continued a growing call for party activists for closed primaries. Close the freaking primary, said Martha Stewart of Sumner County, who said she spoke to Republican House Whip Johnny Garrett about the issue. He said, if we close the primaries, we'll lose seats. We have a supermajority. Why would a Democrat who crosses party lines pay the whatever it was, $10, and have the track record of all the other things, blah, 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 and then become a Democrat after 6 to 8 years to say, I'm going to run as a Republican now, et cetera. All the things you just described that they said was the reason for this doesn't really make any sense.
No, and I had actually argued because, you know, exactly. I think what you're saying is, you know, say say you're a Democrat and you want to vote in the Republican primary. So you voted in 3 out of the last 4 Republican primaries, which is not a huge thing here in Williamson County because you don't have a lot of choices as a Democrat. So you're like, I'll vote Republican. The only last thing you need to do to get bona fide is to give a donation to the Republican Party. What the heck? I'm like, that way I can be more involved in the Republican process and maybe sabotage it to the point where I can get my Democrat candidate in. Which sure. I ran in the special election I just ran in. I ran against a Democrat who got 30% of the vote. That's no small feat here in Williamson County. That's a lot of vote.
Yeah. They also said one of the criticisms of the WCGOP, Williamson County Grand Ole Party, was the stringent rules employed to only allow individuals they considered bona fide to participate in the convention. What was learned was the party was actively weeding out the electorate, perhaps purposefully and with forethought. Does that mean that the Republicans themselves were trying to de-conservatize the party?
That's a good question. I don't know. We had 150 people that we documented were my supporters to show up there, and 100 of them were turned away. We still managed, despite all that, you know, you read Steve Hickey's letter and he's right. It's a huge wake up call. I was touched, humbled by the number of people who showed up to support me. And it's a big ask to get somebody to show up to a convention, to give up their evening. And people would ask me, how long is it going to take? I don't know. It could take hours. It did take like 1.5 to 2 hours. It's disenfranchising to those true Republicans who've got 3 out of the last 4 to show up and be told. And remember, a lot of these people were given invites by the Republican Party to say, show up and bring your friends.
Right.
They showed up and brought their friends and were turned away. I had city commissioners' husbands get turned away. We had leaders, you know, of the Rotary Club, their spouses get turned away. You know, community leaders who were turned away and may forever be disenfranchised from the GOP.
Yeah. They went on to say the fracas is only the latest discord in the state Republican Party over bona fides and crossover voting. 2 weeks ago, the group voted to uphold a challenge to the outcome of the Hamilton County GOP mayoral primary, and the Tennessee Supreme Court ruled on Friday to uphold the Tennessee GOP's removal of 5th Congressional District Robbie Starbucks from the ballot. That mess made national news. You mentioned how you felt about Starbuck and Ortegas, I guess probably the same thing, their treatment. I think there were 5 others actually also pulled off of the ballot in that same thing. Those are just the most high profile. These things we're talking about, these little loopholes, let's call them, it's really making a mess of the democratic process, isn't it?
Yeah, I did have quite a few friends and acquaintances who were forced to run as independents, who were running in different districts. And I think in hindsight, the Republican Party was probably sorry for what they had done, because, again, those people are disenfranchised now. Like, what has the Republican Party done for me? And they might have even had their last 3 out of the last 4 Republican primaries, but they didn't meet the other criteria, which they used for my convention, was money. But it can be time or money. And sometimes it's hard to document if you've spent time. So they were actually just saying if you had showed up for the Reagan Day dinner. But a lot of those, and now they are starting to actually take attendance, which I think is great, because you do want to try and filter out the Democrats. You're assuming Democrats aren't going to show up at a Republican event, but they may well. But I still think we're disenfranchising a lot of people from wanting to be part of the party.
Yeah, and we've all seen now with the 2022 election that just ended, there have been a lot of Democrats actually running as Republicans trying to take that seat. I mean, shocking, right? They actually...
It's not so.
It's not so. Not here, not in Williamson County, let's hope. But about 4 years ago, it says, many people, including people who were clear Democrats, were admitted to the convention on the basis that a $10 donation to the Tennessee Party qualified them as active. These were supporters of the moderate candidate Mary Kate Brown. What was good for them 4 years ago is not good for conservatives now. In the end, the real source of all these issues are the ill-defined bylaws, which allow those in control to manipulate the process to help their favored candidates. In this case, since conservatives had been run out of the county party leadership over the last 4 years, having a more strict definition of active, more than just a last-minute donation, helped the more moderate establishment candidate. But that was clearly inconsistent with what was done 4 years ago when letting in just anybody helped the more moderate candidate. So it does sound like somebody at the top is trying to uneven the playing field, and you somehow were able to run the gauntlet through to the end.
I overwhelmed them. It's exactly what I was saying, was that I got a ton of people to show up. And I think the people in the establishment were shocked. And I was hoping it would. My wife had actually said I broke the back of the establishment. I don't think that's true.
They'll be back. They never give up. Okay, I only have a few more minutes with you. I am very thankful for your time. And I'm really proud that you're able to be back the tide and do what you've done. But this is the worst part of the whole thing, from my opinion. There was a social media post of an op-ed that featured a breakdown of the Williamson County Special Nomination Convention for District 7 Commission, prompted Williamson County GOP Chair Cheryl D. Brown to claim racism and a conspiracy in conservative media. Brown's comment said, quote, "You know what? Y'all a bunch of racist conspiracy so-called conservatives media. How is it that we all Republicans and y'all tear down the first black woman to run the county party? Furthermore, we didn't have to be told the caucus. We didn't have to hold the caucus. We could have made a nomination and picked a candidate. But in the measure of good faith, the county party paid out money to give the Republicans in District 7 the opportunity to choose." Bobo, the person who wrote this, replied to Brown, "Nobody, I mean nobody, has ever referred to your skin color in any of these criticisms except you. Now remember, I read to y'all early." Oh no, this is my part. "I read that Williamson County is 90% white and 4% black, so it would be easy to determine if so few people were persecuted in some way, shape, or form. Why'd she go there?" And I got about 2 minutes left with you.
I don't agree with those statements. There is a little bit of backstory there. I was not involved in that social media fray. I try to stay out of social media. I did receive a call from Cheryl Brown asking me to intervene because it was making everybody look bad. The establishment, the party, the grassroots Republicans, I did. I told everybody to just back off. We've been trying to build bridges. That's all you can do in politics. And I really don't know why Cheryl went there. I don't know her that well. I don't think there's been, I haven't seen any racism at all. I certainly think that the people that I've seen in the Republican Party are just a good bunch of people. There are many minorities in the
Williamson. And just to be clear, she is the Williamson County GOP chair. She is the first African-American woman to be in that seat. And she decided to say those things. Nobody forced her to, we don't know of, but that's how that goes. And I respect you saying that you don't want to get involved in that because it's just nasty, but it did happen. And it was all in relation to the convention that they decided to hold and how she had said that she was gracious to have held it in the first place. They could have just picked somebody else and not you.
And she is correct.
She could have, yes. Okay. So in the last few seconds here, Commissioner, I know it's 96 hours early, but I'll call you Commissioner. I really appreciate it. We're nearing the end here. Please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you, your office, and follow your chair.
All right. I probably still, I've got my election page still up. It's vote at AlexiRichards. .com. I'm like, they can find out more about me. I should be listed very soon. I'll get my apparatus up and running. I'd like to keep my constituents informed. I plan on having at least an online newsletter and an email. I'd like to talk about every single vote that I'm taking and why I'm taking it. I'm like, I think that we've struggled to find out that information from our commissioners.
Perfect. Your transparency will be gladly appreciated. So yes. Thanks again for coming on with us, and good luck in office.
Thank you so much. We appreciate the time to be on your show.
My pleasure. I don't know. Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard and anything else on my mind today. Producer Steve, what did you think of Commissioner Christopher Richards?
Well, I just want to say congratulations, Christopher, for a job well done. And it reminded me, we were talking off air about this. This is what I tell people that are running for office, Steve. Do not give up when you lose. You got to come back 2, 3, 4 times before you win. It takes that long for people to get used to you. So we're talking cycle after cycle. So every 2 years, keep running, and maybe on the sixth year, you're going to get in. It's just
That's
guaranteed.
Right. What do I always say? You got to get name recognition first, then you lose. And you got to figure out where the votes are to be had in your district, number two, and then maybe by the third you win. And that's exactly what Richard Nixon had to do, and he never gave up. So perseverance is key, just like that Bible quote I said. So I got kind of a long segue here, let's call it. So we had an election last week. You may have heard about it. And the exit polls are in. And I'm going to read a headline to you. Second largest turnout of young people voted in midterms in 30 years. Circle's report also pointed out that young people voted for Democrats more than they voted for Republicans. The Edison Research National Election Poll exit poll showed that the youth voted selections across the country were 63% in favor of Democrats. They voted, that's good, but also bad. Check this out. Clip one, please, Steve.
Strategically, bad. All right, now I'm going to tell you the real answer. You're all wrong. All of those reasons you gave, they're all wrong. Who made the difference? Who made the difference in the election? What demographic group dominated the result? Young people of what kind? Unmarried women. Young unmarried women were the dominant folk, okay? And those young unmarried women, they were getting their news from Fox News? Fox News? Is that where they're watching? Were they watching television news? Were the young single women watching a lot of television? Getting their news from television? How about Twitter? Twitter's mostly male. By the way, could somebody give me a demographic on that? Twitter's mostly male, right? So what would be a large media kind of a platform that young women tend to gravitate toward more than other people? Yeah. You see it? TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
TikTok is the primary communication to young single women. It's owned by China. Do any of you use TikTok? Here's a question. Have you ever seen anything on TikTok about border security?
Okay, get ready.
Border security. It's all over TikTok, isn't it? Nope. Probably never seen it. Now, I'm not on TikTok, so I have to ask this question. First of all, how many of you are on TikTok? Are there enough people watching here that you can even answer this question? Yeah, I want to see some yeses. Any TikTok people? A lot of no's. All right, my audience doesn't overlap with TikTok much. All right, so I don't know if any of you know this, but How many TikTok users have seen a abortion related TikTok? Anybody? Have you seen any abortion communication on TikTok? I'm seeing yeses. Right? Now, you know who owns TikTok, right? Everybody knows China. It's a Chinese company, which means the Chinese government can tell this company to do anything they want. Anything with the algorithm. You see it, right? The group of Americans that controlled the election outcome are the group of Americans that China controls through TikTok.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so a little bit long, but I wanted everyone to hear that. So brainwashed by CCP, TikTok users, and mostly young ladies. That's a much longer clip from the creator of Dilbert. You should all look for and watch the rest. It's too many F-bombs for my show. And at the same time, we get a report from the Christian Post that says, quote, this is the headline, 42% of Gen Z have diagnosed mental health conditions, majority worried about future. Okay, listen, nearly 70% of Gen Z, people born between 1997 and 2012, say their mental health as adversely impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic, with 42% of adult members of the cohort reporting that they have been diagnosed with a mental health condition, and many of them say they are worried about the future, a new study from data management from Harmony Healthcare IT shows. The most frequently cited condition were anxiety and depression, which were reported by 90% and 78% of respondents, respectively. Other conditions reported included ADHD, 27%, PTSD, 20%, OCD, 17%, eating disorder, 14%, and insomnia, 12%. PTSD, Steve? That's crazy, folks. That's associated with combat veterans that see their friends blown up. Not COVID. How many likes they did or didn't get on Instagram today.
COVID. That's what it is. When they shut down, everybody went nuts.
Yep. Let's hear from their favorite news source. Play clip two, please.
Better than Biden, better than Trump. So he ran ahead of both of them. But he also, you know, did fairly well in the cities and in the collar counties. And I attribute that partly to the extremism at the top of the ticket in Pennsylvania with Mastriano. Dr. Oz's comments on abortion, which was part of that debate that perhaps did not get as much attention. It got attention from the professionals, but not from a lot of the media, because that really was as big a deal coming out of that debate as Fetterman's performance.
I also think he ran everywhere in the state, which is a lesson for Democrats. He left no stone unturned, and he ran as exactly who he is. I mean, I have no doubt that if John Fetterman were sitting here, if he were in a bar, if he were with his family in a restaurant, he'd be exactly the same person. And voters completely see through that. So that is also a lesson for Democrats, too. This is a guy, you know who he is, you know what you're getting, and that ultimately matters in politics.
Fetterman as a nominee at some point for president, I know there's some variables, obviously, what he did in the super red, deep red parts of Pennsylvania, and the way that he ran ahead of Biden, as you were saying, ran ahead of Trump. I mean, it makes you wonder about his future.
That is how you get a John Fetterman as a U.S. senator, because they do watch MSNBC. If you ever wondered who watches that garbage, president, sure, why not? They gave us Joey. And guess what? They were duped. The day after the election, the Department of Education removed the student debt relief application from their website.
Yes.
Oops, can't get that vote back. Now, the good news. Parental rights factored big on election night. 9 school boards flipped conservative in 6 states. Thank you, Moms for Liberty. Whatever comes after Gen Z looks brighter. And more good news, in my opinion, more female governors will take office in 2023 than ever before. 12. Sorry, Oregon and New York and Arizona. You get some awful ones. Let's see how they do, but not in Georgia. Is this the last of Stacey Abrams? Between her and Beto in Texas, that's $250 million of cryptocurrency Dem donor money burned. What do you think of that, Steve?
I love all what you are saying, and it's nice that you're sharing the different views. And I wouldn't blame China one iota on this. Having listened to a few other people and having looked at the last 2 years, I'm telling you, that demographic of females are—they're the ones that are still wearing masks. They're still—they're freaked out. And when you fear porn somebody 24/7 for 2+ years, those poor gals are nuts. And it's easy to sway, and they're going to gravitate towards people they think they can trust.
Yeah, and they were pandered to with free college forgiveness.
Oh, that's the other one. Yes, yeah.
Okay, one more clip from a guy that saw this coming long, long ago. This is 1993.
Because I'm wearing these ribbons, I care more than any of you about anything. And these ribbons say so. I want you people sitting at home and you people in the audience, look down at your lapel right now. I want you to do this. Put the camera back on me. Do this. When you look down, what do you see? You don't see anything because you're not wearing any ribbons. It means you're a bigot. It means you're a racist. It means you're a sexist. It means you're a homophobe. It probably means you're a white guy. It probably means you're a European. And you alone are responsible for all the ills of America. But I'm not, because I'm wearing these ribbons. I care more than you.
That was 29 years ago. So we're not talking about Gen Z or whatever comes next. That was, we've been dealing with this for a long time. So obviously a couple generations now of completely brainwashed idiots have decided who's going to be the senator from Pennsylvania and who's going to be the president of the United States. Now, we call that virtual signaling. If that's not the business model of TikTok and all the new pharma drugs to help youth cope with the feels, I don't know what is. Now, you know where there wasn't a red wave?
No.
Tennessee. And guess what, buddy? 11:15 today, as we record this, November 15th, the UN says world population to reach 8 billion on 15 November 2022. Do you know what that means?
It's good luck. Good things.
Well, it does, but it also means Bill Gates and the World Economic Forum's Klaus Schwab and the rest of the sociopaths failed.
That's
so
right.
So much for population control, huh? Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to our Thought of the Week. But before I share, I want to remind you again, everybody, to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Why haven't you done it yet? Come on, man, do it. Just do it to iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere, and hit the subscribe button. Thanks for doing that. Nothing in this world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of uneducated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. The slogan, press on, has solved and always will solve the problems of the human race. Calvin Coolidge, my favorite president. Well, that's it for this episode. Really hope you like it. Write to me at millcreekview@yahoo.com and I'll read it on the air. Thank you, Commissioner Richards. Please do what you say you'll do. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the MillCreekViewOnline.com. Peace in our time.
Children and the pumpkins at the county fair. They were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like